paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Take care of that throat. You're a big singing star now, remember? This California dew was just a little heavier than usual tonight.
Really? From where I stand, the sun is shining all over the place.
Good morning, it's 10:15. This is GN.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again.
Like me on Facebook, and this scene will be at the top of the queue. Not because of the Oscars, but a little bit because of the Oscars. It's the Oscar weekend, and Griffin, why did we post this on my Facebook page?
The co-director of Singing in the Rain, Stanley Donen, was just announced. He died at the age of 94. Actually, first announced, I saw it on Twitter, by Michael Phillips of the Chicago Tribune.
And when you see that scene, you cannot help but smile and marvel at the athleticism and art and music. That's such a great scene. Don't you agree with me? I mean, if this is silly, but if you said, okay, greatest scenes of motion pictures of all time, or something like that.
It's got to be up there.
You've got to put that in there.
Absolutely. Here's the tweet from Michael Phillips, actually confirmed by one of his sons this morning. Director Stanley Donen has died at 94. With Gene Kelly, he brought On the Town and Singing in the Rain into the world on his own. He brought Seven Brides, Charade, and Two for the Road. A huge, often neglected talent. So nice little remembrance there.
Yeah, I think sometimes we know the scenes, but we don't always appreciate the people behind them. So thank you, Michael Phillips. Thank you, Griffin Filipich, for reminding us of that. I posted that on my Facebook page.
And that's what we'll be doing this weekend, too, talking about stuff like that. Remember, Singing in the Rain did not win Best Picture.
I did not remember that. Do you know what beat it out that year?
Let me look it up.
But that's one of those ones that they say, oh my God, are you kidding me? Glenn Close does not have an Oscar.
One of the historic, you know, you could do it all day, but that's up there for sure.
No, no. By the way, just speaking of the Oscars, what about that other clip? So that was the one Griffin was watching, listening to this morning as we were cobbling together today's little program. But as I was thinking about the Oscars, I'm just thinking a little bit about the fact that we're not going to have a host or MC to guide us through it this year. It's gone really well in years past, and it's gone disastrously in years past. And then this year was just a whole set of confusions and bad choices. And so it appears as though, while we'll have presenters, people will come out and they'll be beautiful. It'll be one handing it off to the next, handing it off to the next. At least that's the way I expect it would be. And when you get your head around that, and maybe that's the way it should be, you will at least miss some of the great Ellen DeGeneres's and Billy Crystal's of the world. So while Griffin was watching Singing in the Rain today, Griff, this is what I was watching. This is 1990. This is Billy Crystal opening up the Oscars.
It's a wonderful night for Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. Who will win? The nominees for Best Picture are me and my left foot.
Remember how we used to do this?
Down that field of dreams, cuckoo place where ghosts can play. Is this heaven? No, Jack, it's highway. When you see Julie's Joe swinging right, it's a lockout, Faye Vincent arbitration kind of night. Could only happen in a field of wheat. Belong to a mutual Dead Poets Society, Walt Whitman and me. Great in a segregated state, driving Miss Daisy back home. Make sure there's fuel to get me to shoe. I'm driving Miss Daisy, he's driving me crazy. I'm driving Miss Daisy back. Born on the 4th of July. Born on the 4th of July. Who will it be?
So it's also funny when you listen to that because you got only five songs, five nominees. If he did it this year, he'd have to do it for eight and potentially 10. But nobody's going to be doing anything like that. So the nominees in 1990 were My Left Foot, Field of Dreams, Dead Poets Society, Driving Miss Daisy, and Born on the 4th of July. Not a bad year. Not a bad year. Don't well, even remember it, who won that year.
That's a year that's come up a lot this year because that was Spike Lee's first time at the Oscars for Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
But he's not in that list of five.
Well, there you go.
He was there for original screenplay.
Yeah.
And now he's back again. And I think we've already talked about this, but there's some weird history repeating itself because he's up against Green Book, which resembles, in a weird way, Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's funny because when you watch the clips from 1990, and again, we were this morning, at least I was, putting together the show, and so Billy Crystal's monologue, they cut to Spike Lee, who is sitting there, and he says, the great movie director Spike Lee is here. He's nominated for original screenplay. And Spike is just kind of looking down at his feet, smiling. And it's not a happy look. I don't know. Maybe he's being humble and, oh, shoot, don't shine the light on me. But you also got the feeling that he's looking at going, yeah, I'm in the wrong category. I should be best motion picture. It's just funny time travel. So we'll see what happens tonight. And
tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Don't, yes. don't go looking for it tonight.
Yeah. In fact, we set the clocks ahead an hour, 2 weeks from tomorrow. 2 weeks from tomorrow. You know, I'm always trying to look on the bright side of life. I'm always trying to think of what's something good for today or tomorrow or the next day or the next day. And when you look outside at a day like this, though 38 degrees isn't bad, it's not the most lovely weekend. But I've been telling myself, okay, if I get through this weekend, here are your milestones to warmer weather. The auto show was last weekend, right? This weekend, we've got live baseball, 2 o'clock here, spring training, White Sox on WGN Radio. That will sound lovely to hear live baseball on this little radio station of ours at 2 o'clock. The Oscars are tomorrow, so there's a weekend, right? We get through that. Then next weekend, you'll say both January and February are in the rearview mirror, because next weekend it's March, and it's Mardi Gras weekend, which is a bellwether for some folks. And then the next weekend, you spring forward. It'll be a lot more daylight during the day. The next weekend after that is St. Patrick's Day. Hey, we're just already halfway through March. And the week after that, you're March 28th, and that's opening day for Major League Baseball. The White Sox will play at Kansas City on the 28th, and then a week later they open up at home against Seattle. So see, it's summertime already. 1025 WGN, 38 degrees, 2 degrees warmer than the expected high. I don't know if all the moisture and cloud and fog in the air is what's keeping the temperature as warm as it is, but it's kind of pleasant. You go outside this morning and you can just sort of feel, not spring, but you can tell that, by golly, March is right there and it will be warm again soon. The Red Hot Hawks are hoping for a little more February fire as they look to handle Big D, a huge L. Okay, a little cleverer than I am here. The Red Hot Hawks are hoping for a little more February fire as they look to hand Big D. That would be anyone? Anyone? I'm guessing Detroit? No.
Dallas.
Dallas. Do they go by Big D? Does everybody know
Big D? I have no idea. Usually these things are pretty clever. I'm kind of thrown off a little bit by that one.
Hand Big D a huge L. I know which one that is. We want them to lose, right? Is that it, Joe?
Yeah, yeah.
The other team?
It.
Or languish in obscurity.
Languish. Yeah, that's if there's one thing a hockey team doesn't want to do, it's languish.
Right.
And drop an L on them, languish. So it's Blackhawks Stars, Sunday at 2 on WGN TV Sports and, of course, here on WGN Radio. Hawks had, before last night's game, won, what was it, 11 of their last 13? I think that was it.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I lost to Boston and then another one against Columbus. Yeah, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, the power play's been looking good. The offense has been bailing them out of most games, and yesterday just a little too much.
Last 60 seconds of last night's game were about as exciting as it gets, because really it was 4-3, and doggone it, I thought we were going to score. We had a 6-on-4 and couldn't put the biscuit in the basket. By the way, Griffin, you said something about Singing in the Rain you wanted to correct.
Well, just it's sort of an amendment, not a correction exactly, but they were not, it didn't, Singing in the Rain, obviously co-directed by Stanley Donen, who we just announced passed yesterday or this morning, did not win Best Picture at the Oscars. Also not nominated.
Wasn't nominated.
At the 25th Academy Awards.
The one that did win that year was...
The Greatest Show on Earth.
What other...
Commemorated last year, sort of, with The Greatest Showman starring Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, right, right, right. Mm. I watched about half of that.
And I don't think The Greatest Show on Earth is one. I have not personally seen it, but it's not remembered super fondly. So that's the way it goes.
Stood up as way as Singing in the Rain has.
Oh,
by the way,
tough.
Not to be Mr. Entertainment here. I'll let Dean Richards do that tomorrow. But in music this week, we also noted on my show that Ariana Grande landed songs in the first, second, and third position on the Billboard Hot 100. Last done by the Beatles in 1964, when the Beatles had 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Number 1 in America right now is Seven Rings. Number 2 is Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored. By the way, that's also the best song title in America right now. That is number 1 on song title, number 2 on the charts, Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored. And number 3 is Thank You, Next. In 1964, when the Beatles did that, they had, as I said, not just 1 through 3, but they had 1 through 5. Here it is. Number 5 was Please Please Me. Number 4 was I Want to Hold Your Hand. Number 3 was She Loves You. Number 2 was Twist and Shout. And number 1 was Can't Buy Me Love. So that's the Beatles 1 through 5 in 1964. But here's a funny thing. Peter Tork died this week, right? And a lot of us have a very fond place in our hearts for the Monkees and for Peter Tork, really for all of them. And so now Peter Tork has passed away after battling a rare form of cancer that they thought they had licked but did not. He lived long after its initial diagnosis and has now passed away. He had a weird life. You know, he went bankrupt. He went to jail. He was in an Oklahoma penitentiary for 3 months for hashish and just... It wasn't all smooth sailing. He was so exhausted after they made their parody documentary Head that he bought out his Monkees contract and gave them back 4 years of pay. Cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars. He said, I can't do it. Maybe a good choice, maybe not a good choice, but Peter Tork has passed away. Well, if in 1964 the Monkees, the Beatles, had those 5 hits, 3 years later, the Beatles were still a going concern, as were the Rolling Stones. But in 1967, the Monkees outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones combined. So for those of you who don't know the Monkees, and you don't have to because they have not endured. They were not as great as the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. You do need to know that in 1967, that was a thing. And they were really good. It helped to have Neil Sedaka, Neil Diamond, Carole King and people like that writing your songs. We got to pause. It's 10:31. Thank you, Don. Admiral Schofield was the name my son said he liked, which made me think of some other fun names. Somebody on the Facebook feed, I'm WGN King John on Facebook, said they like Mackie Sasser. Some of these are just, you know, to the ear, fun to say. Mackie Sasser, Yvonne Cornway. Just nice. Get some syllables and run them on out there.
It's like a beginning to a rap song.
Yeah.
I was always disappointed that Yoannis Cespedes isn't Yoannis Cespedes. It just would have been way more
fluid. Yeah, it's
more
rhythm to that. I like Equanimeous St. Brown and his brother, like Osiris. Is that family's just interesting names.
Equanimeous and Osiris.
Yeah, and Ra, I think the brother's name is. Yeah, all Egyptian, like, God-influenced and stuff.
Wouldn't it be nice, then, just to kind of mess with people if the fourth brother was named Tim?
Yeah, really underplaying it, yeah.
That's how they...
Rob.
That's how they did the Key and Peele.
I was thinking
football.
Of this bit, yeah.
Of course, you can't have a conversation like this without thinking about it, but... The last name at the end. So it's one of those football, the team members introducing themselves on camera, and they say their name and where they went to school. And they're just, my personal favorite is Jack Marius Tech Theratrix. But just so many great names. And then the last one's Dan Smith.
But your favorite is?
Jack Marius Tech Theratrix.
Dan Smith went to BYU, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Dan Smith, BYU.
You're done right, he did. Yeah, Google that if you just want to laugh your full head off. It's Key and Peele, and it's what's the best search word for that, Greg?
Just like honestly,
NFL
football
names,
football,
yeah. Football
intros, because those are kind of fun. There's a movie that is nominated for Best Documentary called Free Solo. And I don't suppose you guys have seen it. Griffin, I think you have. I watched it the other night. And I just wanted to talk briefly about it. If you're clicking around and you can buy this movie, which we did, Free Solo is the one that you may have heard about where the guy solo means you're by yourself, and free or freestyle means that you don't have any ropes, no harnesses, nothing to help you. So someone who climbs free solo is climbing the face of a mountain, or in this case, the El Capitan granite block, without any help. He's by himself. There's a camera crew watching him, but if he falls, he dies. In fact, that's one of the quotes. If he slips, he falls. If he falls, he dies. His name is Alex Honnold, H-O-N-N-O-L-D. In June of 2017, the 33-year-old became the first person to climb the California granite monolith El Capitan without any ropes, a skill known as free soloing. And when you see this monolith, El Capitan, you may not know what it is. When you see it, you'll go, oh, yeah, I've seen that before.
It's in Yosemite.
The Gargantuan rock soars 3,200 feet into the air and makes it 500 feet taller than the Burj Khalifa, the world's tallest building. There is simply no room for error, writes CNN. If he slips, he falls. If he falls, he dies. His achievement has been immortalized in a breathtaking movie documentary, Free Solo, which has been nominated for Best Documentary. And then they talk a little bit about him, and they say he has an attitude built on a foundation of hard work and preparation. If I don't know what I'm doing and I hesitate, it can be a nightmare, he says. You just really have to think about this. There's not much of an angle. It's just like a sheer, straight-up cliff, 3,000 feet, that sometimes he says has the feel or consistency of glass, but there's little divots and little cracks and a little bit of grit, and he's able to just climb up it like a squirrel up a tree, straight up. And there's a route that he knows to take. I mean, 3,200 feet up, it takes him 4 hours to do, and he knows where every finger and foot will go. He's climbed before with help, with harnesses, with ropes, and he's studied enough so that he almost literally knows every single step he will take, the way you might know how to do a certain dance, where your foot goes, where your body goes, where your arms will go, and then I'll do this, and then I'll do that. He sort of dances his way up this mountain. By the way, in the documentary, which is really amazing, he's halfway up. He's doing it now. You know, is he going to try it? Is he going to try it? He's only tried it once, and he survived it. He gets to the top. If this isn't the sort of thing you do a lot. And so halfway up, with his focus laser on what he's doing, literally, if he makes a mistake, he falls. If he falls, he dies. There's a guy who has also been climbing, but he's got ropes and harnesses, and he sort of camped himself out at the side of the mountain, and they don't know this guy is up there until they get up there, and he's kind of going around. There's a guy up there on a little, like, gurney chiseled into the side of the mountain wearing a bunny suit. It's the most bizarre thing, and he just, without saying a word, climbs right past him. Very strange. As he approaches the summit, CNN writes, the realization of what he was about to achieve started to break through his steely-eyed focus. Honnold struggled with socializing as a youngster, but was able to express himself through climbing, gradually transitioning to outdoor climbing as he sought new challenges. Moving on to free soloing, climbing without ropes, was a natural progression for him. Some of Honnold's friends have died tackling lesser challenges. It's a stark reality that does not sit well with his girlfriend, Sani McCandless.
Oh, does it not?
Who left Honnold alone in the days running up to the climb. It just seemed like the right call for both of us. We never really had to talk about it, he said. It was useful for me to have empty time to just lay around by myself and visualize or imagine and just emotionally process what was to come, which was wise. He's not 6 feet tall. I thought he was 6'8". He has a build like Michael Phelps. Very long, at least he looks. Very big hands. Very sinewy, strong body. Vegetarian. and he can just grip that mountain and pull himself up. Can you do 3 pull-ups? I can't. Imagine pulling yourself up a 3,200-foot cliff. So he's able to pull it off, and he gets up there, and he's real happy.
I like the paragraph about him not being super well-adjusted as a child. Really? I would love it if that paragraph was like, he was extremely happy and social and got... and just decided to start climbing mountains with no rope or harness, just because.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I'm a little surprised at this story. I have not read a lot about people commenting about his socialization. He's clearly Asperger's or somewhere on the spectrum.
I don't know if you can say that. I don't like an armchair diagnosis.
That's mine.
It's maybe not the best practice to always dive into willy-nilly, but... he's clearly, I'm not going to diagnose him, but yes, he is antisocial in some way. And he's not easy to communicate with for everybody, I'd say. And I mean, anyone who does this, there must be something that ticks a little bit different about them.
Well, they give him an MRI and they say, here's the part that normally would fire on a person's brain when we show them images that are frightening or terrifying, and your brain is not doing anything. It means you need greater stimulation, or you're able to handle great stimulation, but where most of the rest would be freaking out, you are not. So that he can climb up a mountain and keep his cool, they actually saw that in the imagery of his brain. I get that. But I think what's also going on with this guy is, you know, my diagnosis. I don't know that that helps him or hurts him. I'm just saying if that's the kind of person he is. And so when you watch this movie, you kind of wonder if the movie makers aren't making a movie they shouldn't be. That is, here's a person who is taking a risk which could be fatal. And you guys are filming it because he's extraordinary. But maybe you shouldn't take advantage of a person who's not best able to judge the wisdom of this endeavor.
Well, and I think a lot of the movie is dedicated to grappling with that question.
I don't think they go deep enough on that at all.
Really? Well, I felt like they were talking about the whole movie. I mean,
we did see the same film, right?
Yeah.
I think they, so you and I have different takes on how much they focus on that.
I did not get the impression that they went into it without a serious level of thought. It's easy to say now because he succeeded. If he had died, there would be a lot of blame placed on them, I think. And that was a very real possibility. So it's easy for me to talk about this in a certain kind of way. But I definitely felt like they had thought about it long and hard and maybe come to the wrong conclusion but to proceed and film it. But I didn't get the impression that they were
neglecting that point.
Yes.
I think they also didn't talk as much as I was at least curious about his relationship with his girlfriend. So he's at a book signing. Well, he had written a book about his exploits, and he's a quirky and, I guess, good enough looking guy, and there's this attractive young woman, and they strike up a relationship, and she's his girlfriend now. Their relationship is impossible. She's naive and needy and wants communication and touching, and he can't do that.
I would not characterize her that way, but it is true that the relationship was very hard to watch.
It was really hard to watch.
It was more terrifying than scaling that mountain without rope would be dating him.
And
it's just not, it didn't seem healthy.
It did not seem healthy on her part or on his, which goes back to, I think in a relationship like that would have been impossible for her and impossible for him. And the movie does not even touch that topic because it's not about that, but then it's in the movie.
They show you though. I mean, what does touching a topic mean?
I want the narrator to come on and say, see,
I think it was pretty well handled that they show you of things and say, hey, this is it. And there's not that much editorializing, and it'll let you make up your mind. And it's pretty clear what conclusions there are to draw about a lot of this stuff, I think.
Yeah, I guess.
And I like that it wasn't preachy. It also wasn't preachy about the incredible nature of his feet. You know, they really honed in on the details of the climb and what he needed to do and trusted that we would be impressed by the feat itself, which I really appreciated. It wasn't telling you over and over, look at how amazing it is. It trusted the footage they had, which was incredible.
It really was. You can say, oh, I saw Michael Jordan dunk or Bob Beamon jump or, I don't know, somebody run the 109 seconds. I mean, pick the physical endeavor, some gymnastics event, and you go, wow, I saw one of the most amazing things a human can do. This has to be on that list because it just seems physically and mentally impossible. One of the people who commented in the film said, imagine if you are in the Olympics, you have to win the gold. You have to be perfect and the best ever. And if you don't win the gold, you don't get silver, you die. You will fall off this mountain and die. The movie is called Free Solo. It's nominated for Best Documentary. And it's not the movie that people hated the most this year. I just have one note about that after this. So the Oscars are tomorrow night, and I don't... I was out to dinner last night. Shout out to the folks at Carson's. Brenda and I met some of our friends, John and Kathy and Jim and Karen, downtown Chicago last night. We were all sitting around having dinner at Carson's, and we started talking about the movies that are nominated this year, and pretty much everybody at the table had seen all of the movies that were nominated. And there was one movie that when we were talking about them, people got very animated and almost angry. And you can probably guess what movie that is that sort of ticks people off this year. And that's The Favorite. Oh, my gosh. And some of them just couldn't wait to get out of that movie fast enough. I hadn't seen it yet, so I watched it last night after dinner. And I just feel like I have to go on the record saying I thought it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. It was not a pretty movie in some ways, but if you said who's the best actress and best supporting actress this year, I think you could pull two of the three right out of that film.
And and all three are nominated. Did I tell you not to try it because I thought you'd like it?
You said see the movie, you'll like it.
I said over and over, see the movie.
We dragged our heels to that the way we have Vice. But The Favorite, which is a lot of people's least favorite, I would be happy if it won any awards. It's not going to win Best Picture this year, though. I think it's probably going to go to Green Book or, heaven help us, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Look out for it in costume and production design.
Yeah, there really are some amazing costumes, and I don't know much about production design, but it's a very interesting timepiece, that's for sure. It's 10:59. Okay, let's go into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and... Yeah, I got to take a break. We'll go into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, get you the stories that matter next. Thank you, Don. This is John Williams looking down onto the city from the Allstate Skyline Studios. I see umbrellas popped, wiper blades are on. If you've got friends flying in or out of O'Hare or Midway, you might want to check your air carrier. I've got family coming in from out of town, and at O'Hare, their flight has been delayed. You may run into something like that with this fog that we have in the city right now. The Mincing Rascals were judged this year to be the best podcast in the city of Chicago. We post it every Thursday around 5 in the evening, so we have a fresh edition up. And on Saturdays, we broadcast part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. So here we go. The first voice you'll hear, I believe, is our Patty Vasquez, who you hear pretty late on WGN Radio. You'll hear Steve Bertrand from the newsroom as well. Eric Zorn, who's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And the gang starts out this week talking about the 500-acre Jackson Park, 20 acres of which would go to an Obama Center if that thing ever gets built in Chicago. The question has been, should we or should we not put it in that spot?
I don't know how they start these projects without anticipating all the... I mean, the same thing happened with the... I know we bring it up every single time with the Lucas Museum or project. The fight, obviously, is to protect our lakefront.
This will bring more people to Jackson Park than anything else they could do.
And it's not like right in the middle of the park. It doesn't split the park. It's on an edge of the park. It's not all that well used. Every time I've driven down there, there's not a lot going on over there. And I kind of get the principle that they're fighting for, but I don't actually see what the actual harm. People go, we can't go picnic. There's no room in Grand Park or in Jackson Park anymore. I also wish that maybe they'd gone over to the Washington Park area. At the same time, I sort of wonder how many times your average Chicagoan's going to go there. I'll go once to check it out, but there.
School groups will go there, right? People
right?
like that,
yeah.
Tourists
yeah.
will
well,
go there.
Well, but the detractors say, and what? See Michelle's dress or some of Barack's cool stuff? This isn't his papers. It's not a library.
Well, I believe they're also intending to have it as a place for community programs. I mean, the Clinton Library in Arkansas has a lot of great programs that involve students and adult programs, a lot that does a lot of reinvigorating for the area. And that downtown area has flourished because of it.
I love presidential libraries. I've been
so
to Johnson's.
Kennedy.
Hoover. Have you been to Hoover's? It's
Herbert Hoover's in Iowa.
Isn't
I've been
like
to Jimmy
house?
Carter's. I've been to George. And you're right, the papers aren't there, John, but the bulk of the people go to see the artifacts.
The tan suit.
I know. I was thunderstruck that 7 miles south of Chicago, that people that have an interest in that area would say no to $500 million and a couple thousand annual jobs. But the more I hear these people, the more I understand their point. I don't know how persuaded I am, but it's not a slam dunk.
I understand their point, but I don't think it's the thin end of the wedge where all of a sudden we're going to have museums right up to the lakefront, and all the all these parks are going to go away. I think this is a sort of a special case, and the fact that Obama, he was the president of the United States, and he got his political start here in Chicago.
And he lived there.
And he lived down there, yeah. So this is the kind of thing that maybe would be an okay exception. That's not, I don't know.
I can't stand it, but no more after this.
No, man, I agree with the principle that you don't build in parks, but in this case, it's not a critical part of that park, in my opinion, and it's not. It's not going to be the beginning of the museumification of all of our parks.
Let's do this. Let's say that any presidential museum can be built in lakefront parkland.
Okay,
because right? There probably won't be another one.
My son's really really smart, and he's from here, so.
Good job.
I'm just saying.
Good job.
I'm thinking ahead.
Let's talk about the J.B. Pritzker's budget. If the new governor gets his way to fix the state finances, we're going to have a graduated income tax. So if you make more money, you're going to pay more. Marijuana will be legalized in tax. Sports betting will be legal in Illinois. Insurance companies will be taxed to help cover Medicaid costs. E-cigarettes will be taxed. The tax on tobacco cigarettes will go from $1.98 a pack to $2.30. Plastic bags will be taxed statewide, a nickel. Since Chicago's already got 7 cents on a bag, that means here we'll pay 12 cents per bag. $89 million will be generated by video gaming terminals. Some will lose income tax deductions from foreign income. A tax credit enjoyed by parents paying private school tuition will go away. I'm almost done. They'll extend the state payment schedule for the pension, and they'll stir in some natural revenue growth. Those are their words. And an increase in the state minimum wage.
Do they project the tax income they would get from the tax on the Obama library?
don't write that check too fast.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's funny because I was listening to his list, yours now, and I was watching the speech yesterday. And then when you hear the number $130 billion in pension obligations, you're like, yeah, well, I mean, that's got to come from somewhere, and it's not going to be easy or painless. But the idea that he was sort of like, well, people have access to marijuana anyway. I'm just finding a way to get revenue from it was weird.
He's making a classic political mistake. Maybe it's a political wise move, but there's no pain in this. I mean, if you vape or whatever, you're going to pay more. But just like there's no, and there, I don't think there were any spending cuts that he outlined.
It's so funny you say that, because when John was introducing the topic, what came to my mind was like, well, it's nice to have a governor who is upbeat again. But you're right. Upbeat to
Here's why.
Yeah. He's like, here you go.
Legalized marijuana, they're not going to see that revenue this fiscal year, right?
Right.
Well, the graduated income tax, they probably aren't going to get any revenues out of that for 3 years,
that's
maybe.
That's going to take a constitutional amendment.
It has to go through the legislature, and then it has to be put in front of the voters, and then it has to be implemented. So
they're trying to find another way to do it, is what I've heard, without going into the Constitution.
Tax credits and
something like that.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've heard that. And then they could do sports betting fairly quickly, I guess.
I suppose so.
Just call the mob, ask them how to do it.
That's a huge, it's funny. These are sin taxes, right? I mean, they didn't increase.
There's no sin anymore.
Evidently.
It's just like evil. See?
Plastic bags.
It works.
Plastic bags.
I don't know why they don't go after booze. I mean, that's easy money too. Folks are going to continue to drink, and they're going to pay it, and they might not even notice it.
There's a point of diminishing returns with this, John, if you put a tax on plastic bags and you think, oh, if every plastic bag is sold, we're going to get 5 cents, then people stop using plastic bags. And in Chicago, especially, if you've got 12 cents a bag, you're going to start remembering that next time you go to the store.
Yeah, right.
That happened to us.
Absolutely.
It took me a little while to get used to remembering to bring bags to the store. Now I remember every time.
I have a big purse.
It's amazing to me how often I'm walking into the Jewels and I go, ah, and then sometimes I will walk out with a, and sometimes I'm getting just a few items. I just walk out with arms full of stuff.
Well, what happens when, is there conflict? Because I don't have this in the suburbs, but in my grocery stores, if you get a dozen eggs, they might put it in a dozen bags.
Right.
And they're so careful with their bags. So, I mean, is there conflict with you guys when you're at the Jewel and you say, no, put that one in there. I only want one plastic bag or two plastic bags.
I don't have that. I mean, I honestly don't know how closely they're keeping tabs on that, because you'll hand them your bags, your cloth bags.
No, I'm talking about the plastic bags you're paying for, though.
But if you don't, then they're going to start putting it in their bags. And I never see them going 1, 2, 3, 4, counting up the bags and multiplying by 7 cents. I guess that's supposed to be happening, but I don't.
Yeah, at Mariano's, they do.
They're pretty conscious of that, cognizant of that. Then, so then you're like, no. Right. We can put everything in this one thin little.
This bottle of shampoo will never rupture and involve my lettuce. It won't. Put them in the same bag.
I'll confess to having done this, going to a grocery store and left my bags in the car. And so when we get off the belt, I'll say, just put them in the cart, and I'll take it out to the cart, and I'll bag them at my car. It's more like the principle of the thing. Like
I literally will put things in my pocket and just have, I'll carry the milk jug. I'll have
Then he's arrested for shoplifting.
Some celery.
I'm not kidding. I have a huge purse.
You do. That helps. Yeah, yeah. That helps. You know, I'll just say one last thing about this, and that is taxes on tobacco have always kind of bugged me. We all share the medical expenses of people that smoke. But I think what you're really doing is taking people who are addicted to something, and you're asking them to carry a disproportionate share of the burden.
Well, that's true with gambling, too, isn't it?
I guess for addicted gamblers, but pretty much everybody who's buying cigarettes is addicted to tobacco. Not everybody that's going to game is addicted to gaming. I just think that's so unfair to those people to, for every pack they buy, now ask them to pay $2.30. That's some people are therefore going to spend $4, $5, $6 every day on a tax.
Or they'll drive down to Indiana and load up the trunk, right?
My father started smoking non-filtered Camels when he was 12 years old and passed away at the age of 68 from small cell lung cancer. But I tried doing the math one time because he was up to 4 packs of cigarettes a day. And I thought, wow, we could have had a really big house.
Sorry, that's right. But I wonder if they do that calculation, too. And I don't blame them if they go, look, I know I shouldn't smoke and it's nasty and I can't smoke indoors and I'm paying $2 a pack. But really, now you're going to hit me for another 30 cents? Not because you care about me. But because you need the money, and that's not fair to me. I mean, this really is an argument for going after gin drinkers or Big Mac eaters because
it's so weird.
Those are bad habits.
Gin drinker,
too.
Why do you do that?
I'm throwing myself under the
vodka.
Bus.
He meant vodka.
Did I say gin?
Whose week was worse, the Cubs or the White Sox? The season has not yet started, and the Cubs just wrapped up a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad stretch, and the Sox were dissed by Manny Machado. They're pitched to the Dodgers shortstop.
Yeah, he's going to be the San Diego Padres shortstop.
But we offered him more per year and potentially more overall, and yet he said, no, I'm going to go to San Diego.
I think guaranteed money was more in San Diego, right?
Correct, yeah. But he, with incentives, could have gotten $350 million maybe here, $300 million for sure there. We were going to offer him more per year for 8 years.
I wish I could relate to that. I understand, like, $300 million is not enough. I must have more. What do you do with that kind of money?
After a while, then you just say, okay, I'll never spend the money, so where am I going to live?
How much is enough? Live
in San Diego with $300 million or Chicago with $300 million, where do you live, Patty?
I blame Jesse Smollett. I think he saw the attacks. He's like, I don't want to live there.
Patty Vasquez and the gang from the Mincing Rascals podcast. By the way, Jesse Smollett was the object of the conversation for about the first 8, 9, 10 minutes of this week's Mincing Rascals podcast, but that story changes so quickly, we're all exhausted from it, and so I'll let you listen. And by the way, I thought the conversation from the gang was very spirited, very informed, and very good. I'll let you check that out when you download and listen to the Mincing Rascals.
On Saturday night, my man would always deliver. Whether he was the bumblebee girl or a living in a van down by the river. He loved the Bears and did the dance at Chippendales with Swayze. When they replaced his coffee with Folgers, he went crazy. The sexiest cap girl and meatloaf in the band. Without him, there'd be no lunch lady in lunch lady land. You know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about my boy Chris Farley.
All right. Okay, so on Saturdays at this time, producer Griff introduces us to a song and tells us something we need to know about that. Maybe a hit, maybe a lost track somewhere. Griffin, what was that?
That was Adam Sandler singing about fellow SNL legend Chris Farley and his castmate when they were on the show together.
Fallen homie.
That's right. That was on his special 100% Fresh that came out a couple months ago. I think we actually talked a little bit about that special.
We did that.
And that was near the end.
I love that song. I gotta go watch that video.
Yeah, it's great.
Me too.
What I heard, I thought was really, really good.
Well, this was Joe's idea.
So thoughtful. Joe, why is this on your radar?
Well, Griffin and I kind of tag-teamed this. Yeah, I had watched it a couple of weeks ago because I had heard so much about it. And the entire special is just, it's very Adam Sandler. So I kind of wanted to bring up, a couple weeks ago we did just rank Tom Brady. If you haven't seen this special, I guess we could just do that with Adam Sandler. But it's full of just his quirky songs and this weird voice he does. But it is good. It is. But it's just, it's 100% Adam Sandler. That's what it should be instead of 100% fresh. But that last song towards the end is just so cool and so touching and kind of really like pulls back a curtain of Chris Farley's life that I never really knew. I a few of the stories I had heard before, but learned some other things about him. And it's just very cool, very touching. It just talks about what an impact Chris Farley still has in the comedy world and just the world in general. And he's been off this earth for so long now. It was his birthday just a few weeks ago, so we were trying to get it then. But yeah, I mean, just if you haven't seen it, I would say go ahead and rank Adam Sandler, but I definitely recommend at least listening to this song if you don't have time to watch the whole thing.
You know why this is complicated for me is because the Adam Sandler on SNL I love, the Adam Sandler in movies I didn't love as much.
Well, I was just thinking about that, and that's the title of the special is 100% Fresh, and that's a reference to the fact that he gets poor movie reviews, not anywhere near 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, more like in the teens and
right.
With his most recent movies. Someone on Twitter, I wish I could credit them, but I can't remember who it was, but someone mentioned something that was really interesting about his career, which was he was so obviously a gifted performer and comedian, and you just like him, and that's what this special gets right back to, is just like you were saying, it's just totally him, the unfiltered. He can just be himself, and it's hard not to like that.
Yeah.
In his movies, he got total control over his career way too soon, if that makes sense. He was such a huge star that they said, go make whatever you want, which most actors or performers don't get. And the fact that he got that so soon and for such a long time, he still has total control over his movies, was actually a detriment to what he does, I think, on screen anyway. So
I wonder if that's what happened to Eddie Murphy, too.
I think there might be something like that going on with Eddie Murphy, too. But because I love Adam Sandler, and I can't say that I've liked any of his recent movies, but I do love him, and that's what cuts right through in this special. So it's really a pleasant surprise.
The Adam Sandler special, which in this case was a song about Chris Farley.
Well, yeah, that's one of the songs on his new special.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if we're just vibing on where our hearts and heads are, okay, so right now, Adam Sandler, I'm in 89. I'm back. I'm 100% fresh for Adam Sandler. Is that what you wanted from this show?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can make it as what you want. That's kind of what this whole segment is about. Yeah. But I agree, though. I obviously, all of Adam Sandler's beginning movies are classics. They're instant classics, really.
Yeah, the first four. You got Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, Waterboy, and then Big Daddy, I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and Big Daddy is the first one where starts to go a little bit down. I mean, Mr. Deeds is kind of that middle movie where you see that downhill plane going. Again, just the whole time watching it, I just wish he wouldn't sing so much, but I get it, that's him. I just, because he would do some stand-up, and I was laughing a lot more than at the songs. I get it. It's just this part of creativity that I think people will still be impressed by him if he's not singing all the time. But I get that's a huge piece of him, and he just wanted it to be all him. I will give him an 87 as well.
Yeah, that seems about right. And when you see him now in movies made by other people, he was in a Noah Baumbach movie a couple years ago called The Meyerowitz Stories with Ben Stiller. He's an amazing actor. I love, and like in Funny People, that movie that came out almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
Geez.
Oh, yeah.
Rain Over Me with Don Cheadle. He plays like a veteran in that. He's incredible.
Punch Drunk Love, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie. He's an amazing actor when he's plugged into the right places, but they just throw money at him, and he's got this production company, and he hangs out with his friends, and a movie comes out of it, and that sounds great, and I'm happy that he gets to do that, but the movies have been tough, so it's nice to see him doing something that like he really excels at, just see him shine.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you guys to rate Nike shoes. Joe Brand, 1 to 100.
Oh boy,
your love of the brand, go.
Well, wow, just after the recent news, I think we got to give him a 20, right? But you know, who knows? Is this something that helps Nike? Now they say we've constructed our shoes bigger and better, so that even Zion Williamson can contain them in his right foot. I mean, Or are you going to see other shoe companies attacking the ad now?
That scene cost them hundreds of millions of dollars in paper. You know, I mean, the stock loss was 2% at one point. Yeah,
1.1 really? Billion.
Yeah, yeah. So
I mean, it's Nike. It'll bounce back. It always does.
I just worry about that company. And if the swoosh goes away, a little bit of me dies.
I'm a fan of the swoosh. I am, though. I'll give it. No, I don't care about the recent news. Give me them at 88.
Yeah, right. That's kind of where I'm. By the way, Colin Kaepernick's hoodie, I think it is. I'm trying to think. They have a jacket or something you wear on top that is Colin Kaepernick branded that LeBron wore to the Super Bowl. And that sold out at $150 a pop this week. You cannot get them.
Wow.
The point of that is the brand's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
They're doing okay.
It feels like a blip.
It would have felt like to me was just, I mean, think about that. The two most famous, most important maybe feet on earth right now for the most important company, athletic company in the world, with Barack Obama sitting right there looking at him.
I know.
All the stars lined up, North Carolina and Duke. And that one shoe, have you guys ever heard of a shoe exploding like that?
No.
I'm trying to think of anything where a high-name brand has just totally malfunctioned. It'd be like if Beyonce was eating a burger from McDonald's and it had a worm in it or something. None of that would happen, but I mean, that's the kind of impact that happened with this.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to do this. This is what I always do, but there is a movie called Elizabethtown. I'm so sorry. There's a movie called Elizabethtown starring Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst. It came out maybe over 10 years ago. It's actually a horrible movie. It's directed by Cameron Crowe, so it was a big surprise when it was that terrible. The premise, though, is he goes back to his hometown because he was working at a shoe company and designed a shoe that was like they had this huge marketing push behind. And it, for some reason, as soon as it hit stores, it was an immediate failure. And I always thought, that is the dumbest idea for a movie. You would know if a shoe was going to fail
before it got on the shelves.
It was just one of many confusing things about it. But watching these shoes explode, I was like, oh, okay.
Okay, so that could happen.
This is.
Thanks, Zion, for legitimizing the plot of this horrible movie.
Put your hoverboards away. Now you got to worry about shoes exploding.
Well, for that.
It is like you have one job, just be on his feet. Couldn't even do that.
Hopped right off.
There's a couple of economics professors we called, and we said, okay, can you liken what happened to Nike and Zion Williamson to any other product or person? And they said, well, the hoverboards thing was an issue where it was very popular, well-made product, a lot of people like, but doggone it, there was just enough videos posted of the things exploding and catching fire that I don't know what it did to sales overall. I know it hurt them for a while. And it wasn't one isolated incident. You know, I can't, it's not perfect. Like somebody said, what about Tylenol? I don't think it's the same as Tylenol or New Coke. Those were rollouts, but this wasn't that. This was an existing product that just was on the biggest stage, and one of the pair of sneakers blows up, and it cost the company $1 billion.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Freaky.
Wasn't it not too long ago that somebody complained that there was a mouse in their Mountain Dew can? But then Mountain Dew came back and said, listen, that's totally impossible because the ingredients in Mountain Dew would have disintegrated that mouse.
So we got that going for us.
Yeah.
You know what they do to repair this, though? Is it Kylie Jenner? Is she the one that you get a lot of money for if she tweets something positive about you, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
If she would just tweet out herself wearing those shoes, they would go through the roof.
Right. Damaged. Completely wiped away.
Yeah, yeah. Don, you got something for us to rate 1 to 100, please?
Sure. All right. So not a recommendation, as I remember. I've been reading this book by Sebastian Younger called Tribe, and it has to do with soldiers that come back from battle or a campaign, and they experience PTSD. But the real crux of the book is basically that those soldiers struggle not because just of their experiences, but trying to readjust to a society which is so tribal. And then it goes back into several historical examples of how human beings are a tribalistic, creature. And yet today here we are with social media, people kind of retreating more and more to an introverted style of existence, or their bonds are over a digital means or something. And I guess what I would question you guys is, how much do you vibe with, people still being a tribal species? Is that still valid, or
Don,
are we moving?
We're doing sneakers, sodas.
That's an interesting question.
Sorry, didn't mean to take it up that way.
What the hell are you talking about, Don? We can't vibe that.
I drank some Mountain Dew over here.
You need to open your mind to the Vibe Score segment. It's an interesting question. just because you said that because we're digital, would that mean that we're less tribally inclined? But when I think of the use of the word tribal in like news all the time, we're talking about politics, and Twitter and things like that do cause to divide us, I think, more easily.
Yeah, I think it's a great revelation for a lot of us. We thought that the internet and all of the digital products and services we have were really going to liberate us and help us, and in a way it's dividing us. I read that book. Right. I interviewed Sebastian Younger when it came out.
Oh, nice.
And I love him. I think he's a terrific writer. He's an interesting character himself.
Yeah, sort of a brilliant spin on it. I did not expect what I got when I was reading the book. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, ask me about the book. I'll give it a 90. And I like him. I like a lot of his stuff pretty well. We are out of time. The music has stopped. We'll pause here. Thank you, fellas. It's 11:48. This is WGN. Real quick note here. It's 11:51 on WGN. This is John Williams. I'm going to go on a trip with Kelly Cruises. If you go to kellycruises.com, you will be able to find out all of the details of the trips that they're sponsoring with some of your friends here at WGN Radio. Lou Manfredini's taking some folks to Alaska. There's a trip that Kathy and Judy are going to take with you. Girlfriends, go check that out at kellycruises.com. And you'll also see my picture and the details on a trip that Brenda and I are leading on July 30th. We're going to Paris for a couple of nights, and then we will go up the River Seine to Normandy, the 75th anniversary of the invasion of Europe. D-Day of Normandy is this year, and it'll just be wonderful to be there. It'll be powerful. And I'm really excited about it. I don't know that the website's been updated to give you this new detail, but if you are at all interested, I think there are 12 cabins left on a boat that will be only WGN Radio listeners. So it's, we're going to be a fun group. And the neat thing about it is that Sue Kelly and one of her colleagues there went on this excursion in the fall. And when they came back, they said, you know what, the way we've laid this trip out is great, but we'd really like to have more time in Normandy. And I was worried about that, too. All the fun we're going to have, but the focus is Paris and Normandy, and we were going to be there for a day. And they've been able to extend it, so we'll have another day or half day that we'll have 2 days of time, two blocks of time on two separate days while we're there to see Normandy. And I don't know that they've detailed that on the website, but they'll detail that for you when you call them on Monday. And if you just want to see the general outlay of it, it's going to be a fantastic trip. And Brenda and I are really looking forward to it. And I'm just personally inviting you right now. So it's July 30th through the first week of August of this year. And it's still not too late to get in. The tickets went like hotcakes. We stopped promoting it. And now there's a dozen seats left. And I'm going to start promoting it again. But I'll just give you this little heads up, this fair warning before they start running commercials again on this radio station, that if you do want to make sure you get on that Kelly Cruises trip from Normandy, from a Paris to Normandy and back, this July and August, go to kellycruises.com, kellycruises.com, and make sure you call them on Monday. Thank you, Brett Jackson, who's the engineer on call today or on staff. He's here and he helps us out throughout the show, Lou and me and the rest of us. Don Kleppen at the WGN Radio Newsroom. Joe Brand, who's on the road but doing sports just like he's sitting right here. And Griffin Filipich produced today. Amy Guth is in the studio. I'm about to out her. She, too, likes the Penny Mustard Furnishings commercials.
I do.
And I love that little campaign.
I know. They're so charming. I feel like I'm friends with those guys. I've never met them, but I love their ads. They're so funny.
I think I'm going to run over and buy a sofa today.
It makes me want
furnishings.
It makes me want to buy. It does.
I know. But if I walk in there and I don't have these funny, zany, quirky, pun-filled people,
I know.
I'm going to be disappointed.
That's right. If I get like a salesperson that's really not, like, with the wonderful accent and that funny and punny, I'm not going to know.
Hey, why are you here? You know, one of those.
I need that.
By the way, I'm also a fan of Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota.
Yeah.
And the narrative about her presidential run has been that she's not only demanding but dehumanizing. She's so hard on her staff that maybe she's not that sweet, homespun, reach-across-the-aisle person that her persona previously had been.
Sure.
And so there's a series of articles now, and that's the narrative she's trying to escape, either because it's true or because that's what happens to narratives. Once those stories get out there, you spend all of your time managing that, even if it's not fair or not true.
Yeah.
And I don't know where Senator Klobuchar is in that continuum. Is this true and unfair, or it's reasonable to tell it because she really is this sort of two-faced person? The New York Times has a story today about how she was on a flight, and her staff member rushed to get her a salad, and they get on the plane, and he realizes that he doesn't have the plastic fork that goes with it. She takes out of her purse her plastic comb and eats the salad with her comb and then hands it back to the staff person and says, now clean it. And even shared a version of that story with fellow Democrats. That's bizarre and a lot of things. And I don't know if that's true or not. But
also, I feel like I would want to clean the comb before I ate off of it. Not after.
Okay, are we going to have a conversation about eating with combs? Because I'm going to eat with
we're really going to go there.
Griffin, I don't know about you, but I'm eating it with my fingers before I'm eating it with my comb.
If I told you that a website published a story about eating a salad, like one of their writers did try to eat a salad with a comb after reading that story.
Are you serious?
It absolutely existed. Do you have a guess who might have produced that story?
Well, I would guess a right-wing site, if not BuzzFeed.
No, it's a Slate.
That Slate, sure it is.
Of course it is.
I would have guessed that. So there goes that story, and I don't know if that's the media doing its job or the media being ridiculous. What are you going to do, be ridiculous or do your job today?
A little of both. A little column A, a little column B, I think. I would like to say, though, I have eaten a salad I didn't have a fork, I had two knives, and I used them like chopsticks. It was fine.
Yeah.
That's an option for you.
That's a different story.
And yogurt. I've eaten yogurt with a knife. You know, desperate times, desperate measures. A person needs their snacks. Anyway. Oh, yeah. I'm going to be a little bit ridiculous and also do my job today. Today on the show, we are going to be talking about the disastrous quarter from Kraft Heinz and what they're looking to do next. We're kind of in this pivot moment with big food companies, and we're going to take a look at that because this very radical cost-cutting strategy clearly did not work. So big food companies are looking more about what do people actually want and how do we accommodate that rather than how to just cut costs and race to the bottom. Then we're going to be on the heels of the shooting in Aurora recently. A lot of workplaces are reevaluating their safety measures. So we're going to be talking with Lauren Zimbach from the Tribune about that.
I'm glad to hear that. As much as we think about schools, I wonder if companies are going to make it that difficult to get in and out of their plants and shops now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really worthy question. I know a lot of newsrooms thought of that after some incidents, and so I think every workplace should think about that these days. We're also going to take a look at the race between U.S. and China to develop a 5G network and see kind of who's ahead and what's next and what that would mean to have it in a really widespread and meaningful way. And about some legislation, so far it's passed in Philadelphia and a couple places in New Jersey, but it's being considered in other cities, including Chicago, that would ban the cash-only or the cash-free store, like Argo T and those places that say cards only. They're making a decent case for why you should allow cash and credit.
I'm glad to hear you tackling that topic. It's a peeve of mine, so I'll get out of the way and be a listener.
Sounds good. All right. Have a great day.